TG Geeks, episode 126, July 17th, 2017. A robot fighter, a bat out of time, a doctor of time causes a wrinkle in time. Hello and welcome to another webcast from TGGeeks.com, where Ben and Keith, the two gay geeks, talk about all aspects of geekdom and nerdery. Sci-fi, comics, film, horror, genre, you name it, we talk about it. I'm Keith Lane, and we're coming to you from TG Squared Studios in lovely monsoony Phoenix, Arizona.
And I'm Ben Ragginton, also coming to you from... Is it Wednesday yet? Is it San Diego yet?
It's Phoenix, almost.
Phoenix. I was going to say Phoenix Comic-Con.
Phoenix Comic-Con.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix, Arizona. And we're trying out some new mics this time. So give us let us know what you think of the sound, if it's different, if it's better, if it's worse, whatever. We'll be glad to hear from you on the new mics so that we can know whether we need to fork over some money for these or not. So we've got an interview for you and then a few news items, so we're going to get right down to the interview. Here we go. And this time we have with us actress and star of a new film, Rogue Warrior Robot Fighter, Ms. Tracy Birdsall. Welcome, Tracy, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So tell us about who Tracy Birdsall is and what is Rogue Warrior Robot Fighter?
I grew up acting and studying all different kinds of methods and working in all different genres, but I was always a sci-fi geek. So, you always have those dreams. You're going to get that audition and you're going to get to be on this next great Star Trek or whatever and be bald and be blue. And that never happened. But I did a lot of, drama, a lot of comedy, and then ended up getting together with a friend of mine, Neil Johnson, who's also the director of Rogue Warrior. And he'd asked me to voice a couple of roles of films he already had in post. And he's like, oh, well, will you do this computer voice? And, I've never done voice before, but it was a computer voice on a starship,
Right.
So it was like, of course. So we just started working, got to know each other really well. And then at that time, I was receiving awards for some other films that I had in completion. And I got this big Maverick Award at AOF, which is for your contributions to the industry and stuff like that. So he kind of took notice, and he started watching how people respected me. But the reason they respect me is because I work a lot harder than anybody else. It's like you've never put in enough work into anything. And I also live my roles like they're part of who I am. So he's like, I got to find a project that you can lead up. And so we went through a lot of his scripts and things like that. And he had one on robots, and it's Rogue Warrior. At the time, it was called Robot Armageddon. It was a lot different, though. But see, I grew up, my father ran a power electronics convention. So I grew up with this like love for robotics.
Okay.
So the idea of doing sci-fi, working with robots, working in the end of the world catastrophes. And also I'm very physical in nature. I grew up a tomboy, very athletic. And so the idea that I was going to work harder than I ever thought possible and using everything, not just my emotions and my physicality, but just everything just was so appealing to me. And so that's kind of where it was born. It was rewritten a million times before it became Rogue Warrior. And then every time we did a casting, he rewrote it again in order to make sure all the characters had arcs and everything wove through perfectly. We must have done 60 to 75 additional shoot dates long after principal photography wrapped.
Oh, good heavens.
Wow.
How long did it take you to film this?
All together over a year.
Wow.
And the whole movie about 2 years. And right up until a week before we premiered, we did another quick little shot that he wanted to put in somewhere where it needed some action, and actually ended up being one of my favorite scenes because I get to headbutt a robot.
Oh, wow.
I played on the boys' soccer team, so I'm like, no. He's like, you got to kick this one and hit that one and do a back kick on this one. And I'm like, can I just headbutt it?
Yeah.
I'm right now, I'm on the IMDb page for this film, and I'm looking at the filming locations.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking,
all over the place.
Holy moly.
You went to Australia? Yeah. Did you go to Australia, or were those just stops?
I see Bribie Island. aerial footage.
Yeah.
And Melbourne?
And Melbourne. We actually shot in Brisbane too, but that scene got cut.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
We shot in a lot of places where the scenes got cut because it's all got to be about the flow of the movie. And since we're both sci-fi geeks, you know, you need a little bit of this here and a little bit of that there. And you can go too far that way. So until you get it in post, you don't know what you need additionally or what you need to get rid of, you know? Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'm seeing that, okay, you're in the Mojave Desert and you're in Yuma. Now, please tell me, while you were in Yuma, that you were there during a civil time, a respectable weather time of the year.
Principal photography was done at a respectable time. All of the pickup shots, which is the majority of our shooting, was done in sometimes up to 120 degrees heat.
Oh.
And some of my costumes were the leather or neoprene. So I would literally get a bag of ice and just start shoving it in.
Oh, dear. Was that like in Yuma when you were doing that?
Yes.
Oh no.
Oh, my gosh. Yuma is...
Yeah, even the robot headbutting scene when you eventually see it... that was done in 122 degrees, and it's the only time I actually passed out shooting.
Wow.
Oh, good grief. What kind
Yuma
of preparation?
Yuma is just crazy.
Oh, we've driven through there.
Yeah, we choose not to drive to San Diego through Yuma. It's a little bit faster to go down that way. But
I hate that drive.
We usually go out 10 to 15 and then down. But
I can't stand Yuma. It just drives me insane. Although I will admit, seeing all those sand dunes is pretty fascinating. But I wonder... what kind of physical preparation and mental preparation did you have to go through did you know you were going to be doing any shots, you know, with that kind of intense heat?
I'm going to be honest with you here. Since I've never done an action film before, and this is very much an action film, I went through the whole script and I'm used to redoing the dialogue and redoing all these things over and over. I really didn't take into consideration the fact that when I went up those few hundred foot sand dunes and had battles on the way down, that I'd have to do it 10 times.
Oh no.
Oh my
10
God.
Times?
Yeah.
I just like completely, somehow my brain didn't go there.
Well, I could understand why, I suppose, if you've never had to do anything like that. I'm surprised that you haven't died.
Yeah, right. It would have been a really great death, though. Think about
it. Yeah.
I mean, then we have a snuff film.
If you got to go, I can't think of a better way to go. It's like whenever a holiday comes up or something, it's always like, we got to shoot on that day. Because those are my favorite days, are my shoot days, you know?
Yeah. So it says that the robots have taken over the universe. Is that kind of?
Yeah. So give us a background on the story.
It's about the overtake of humanity by artificial intelligence, but it's not just on Earth. It's in all different worlds. So there's a weapon out there, and it can fry a positronic network.
Oh, wow.
So Sienna goes on this journey and, breaks one of her team members out of jail, which is held in a different space station, and goes through all these things, gathers her crew. And then she starts slowly taking these out. But then there's an underlying human character story inside of it, which I just loved. And it's all about her self-identity and stuff. And it's what made filming this so difficult. When she'd lose people and things would happen, then she had to kind of take on some of their characteristics. And so that's why it's like when people try to compare it with other movies, it's like, as far as the character, you can't compare it because I created her to be a complete individual. And the end of the movie, she's completely different than she was in the beginning of the movie. But she's stronger than I am as a human, which was very hard on me physically. And she's weaker and more vulnerable than I am as a human. So she goes through so much more than an average human being that it actually kind of taught me to appreciate my life a little more after living her for a couple of years.
Okay. Yeah. The question just kind of came to my mind. When doing these kinds of role or this kind of role, and, uh-huh. and you said that you had studied different kind of method acting, when approaching uh-huh. this particular role, and I get what Sienna is her name, right?
Yes.
When you finish these kinds of roles, do you find yourself taking on maybe some attributes or finding that you've undergone some kind of character growth from playing these other kinds of these roles, especially with a method approach?
It isn't even a method approach. Actually, the person who changed my life, and I haven't auditioned since I worked with her, is Margie Haber. And she's also like Halle Berry's coach and stuff like that. And I worked with Margie years ago. And Margie teaches you to just live the character. So yeah, all the different training method, Alexander, all those things I studied for decades are still inside of me. But instead, when I become a character, I just become that character. And so I decide who they are for months, and they all move different, they all approach things differently, they have different mannerisms and effects, and then I just live it. And then it takes me a while once we finish shooting to kind of get out of their mindset and back into mine. Yeah,
okay.
It's kind of gruesome. Like, I'll just get up, go to the gym, do all my normal things that I do, and then I kind of remember who I am after a few weeks.
No, mm-hmm. That's cool. So
yeah.
You know,
the next film, though, The Time War, is the only film I ever, like, went into the hospital over. Actually, went to the emergency room on The Time War. I got so mentally screwed up because it's so dark and twisted. It's time travel.
Yeah.
One day I was, like, so stressed out. I'm like, okay, I'm, like, going to stroke out filming this movie. I just done some really horrible scene. And I actually called 911, and they took me in and checked me out, and I was okay. And then I got on a plane to England the next day.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my word.
Oh, my.
Only time ever, yeah.
Yeah. So it looks like there's a couple of people in the film that we're somewhat familiar with.
Yes.
William Kircher from...
That's awesome.
He was...
So it's Biffer?
Biffer
in
The
Hobbit?
The Hobbit. And Stephen Manley,
who we've talked to. We've interviewed him. He's a wonderful individual.
Talked to him about...
They both are. Yeah. They both are. Yeah. Both really good human beings.
Did you have a chance to work on screen with them?
Oh, yeah. Lots.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice.
Lots, yeah.
That's great.
That was really nice.
Yeah. I just was going to say something about... We watched the trailer, and you were saying that it was like... you inhabit that character, and the character in the trailer is saying, I am no one, I have no identity, and those types of things. And it's like, oh, wow, that's interesting. And then just based on what you've said about the film, and she's gone through all these things, it's kind of sounds interesting to...
She's uncovered all of the things that she thought that she was.
Ah.
And then she kind of has to set off as a new human being, aware of what she is, both physically in nature and mentally, and just everything. And it's kind of treacherous to actually feel some of the ways that she had to feel. But it's very interesting. Yeah.
How do you prepare for something like that?
Oh my God, months and months and months and months and months. I get off book on everything before I start preparing the character. And then I decide, you know, who they are. I'm a huge people watcher. So I gather little things from people that I see wandering all over the world. It's very interesting. And so that you can kind of feel what it would be like to be them. Like, if I ever gaze at somebody too long, that's why I'm like thinking, what would it be like to be them? And then you have all those memories that you can then draw upon when you're creating a character. And so once I get the dialogue down, then I learn who the character is. Then I decide how they would move differently and feel differently because of those things that they are. And then the lines just come out because they are that person's lines. That's why I get the dialogue off first.
Right.
Then when you're practicing, then it's all together. And then you kind of suit up and put it on and you just feel that character.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I put a ridiculous amount of preparation into things, but that's also why I get to work so much. So.
Yeah. Well, that sounds definitely very method.
Well, it does. I mean, when you, to be
you just
that
inhabit
immersive.
That character, yeah.
Except for you're not using anything else to get you there. You're using that actual character. That's the difference in living it and method is you're not using anything else. Those emotions, those everything are there because you believe that that's what's actually happening to the character.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say that we had an email that came in from the PR for this film.
From Clint.
It says from Clint, and makes reference to you. Oh, shoot, I just lost. But it says that you're something of a champion of independent films.
Yeah, that's kind of become our niche, is to supporting independent filmmakers or independent creators. Because
right.
We're not only filmmakers, but comic book artists and writers and just really supportive of independent creators.
And I also read that this is this film that we're talking about is an independent movie. So let's talk about how this movie came about, because I understand you're also a producer on this film.
Yes. Well, I was a producer in pre-production and post-production, but when I'm shooting, I can't be a producer. I can't have any input, anything, because I'm so immersed in what I'm being.
Right.
I love putting the pieces together. I love filmmaking. So it's like I'm more than willing to help make a project a better project. I've actually helped produce films that I wasn't even a producer on, just because I love all the putting the pieces together part. And I love the collaborative effort of independent film. But if you guys want to hear a really cool little tidbit,
Oh, sure.
so we got our theatrical release, and then we got our Walmart exclusive release. We're actually the only film on the Walmart shelves that's an independent film that's not a studio film. So we're the
Wow. Oh,
only
okay.
ones in there with an exclusive deal, and we were just so excited about that.
Well, that's interesting. I know that Sony has they picked it up for their home video or something to that. As an independent film, how did you woo Sony to pick that up and
I guess,
distribute it?
be the distributor.
Well, our sales agent did it. Neil's used the same sales agent for all of his films.
Oh, okay.
I think this was number 13. And so the sales, they just approach him and they took it. So it's interesting because we find out about everything after. It's like we were excited because we were done about the same time as Rogue One. And we thought, oh, that'd be kind of cool to have Rogue Warrior One and Rogue One on the shelf at the same time. And they ixnayed that. And they said, no, because there won't be enough shelf space.
Oh dear.
So we ended up getting put off for, 6 or 8 months for our release until they had the shelf space and they could go ahead with what the best deal was for the film.
Oh
So
wow. So what is coming up for Tracy Birdsall? What do you have coming up? What projects, what irons in the fire do you have?
I have another comedy that's coming out, but I don't know the release date yet, and that's the Who's Jenna comedy. And I play the lead in that, Jenna Casey. And then there's this film we've been working on. Neil's been working on it for, I'd say, 15
Oh,
years.
good grief.
Yeah, I've been working on it for 3. We
Oh,
actually worked
my.
on The Time War before Rogue Warrior, but it's a much bigger budget picture and a much more complicated film. It's Adolf Hitler traveling through time in order to rewrite history, and he has a messiah complex.
Oh, dear.
And yeah, and the interesting thing in that is I play about 20 different versions of the same character through time travel.
Oh,
And so I had to
interesting.
make them all different. And it was such a challenge to me to be like, okay, well, how's this one different? And how's that one different? And some of them interact with each other and stuff too. It's very, very complicated and just treacherous hard work.
Is that
Yeah.
another independent film?
Yes.
Okay, so I've got it. I'm kind of curious because we've spoken to a number of independent filmmakers, some that we've had in the studio. And what kind of, well, for lack of a better term, how do you raise the kind of money for that? Because I see that Rogue Warrior had a $3 million budget. How do you go about, especially for any wannabe filmmakers who may be listening to this show, how do you go about raising, that kind of money in order to put together a feature-length film?
It's a tough thing, especially with sci-fi, because there's so much in the way of special effects and post. But we make them as inexpensively as possible, and we don't ever sacrifice quality for money. So, like, you approach a big name actor and you show them all the publicity and all the things that the prior films have done. And then when those prior films start making money, you don't spend the money, you put it aside for making the next project.
Ah,
Interesting. I never
Yeah.
knew
So
that.
it's true dedication.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you want that car? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, we're still driving the 62 beater.
You have to sacrifice in life, and it's like you're either gonna use the money to make another great film that is what your life is about, that's immortalizing sci-fi in some way, or you're going to go out and do your worldly pleasures, which bring you nowhere near the amount of satisfaction as making another film.
Right. So
Yeah.
we've discovered that you are clearly a fan of science fiction.
You
How did that come about, and what was your quote unquote gateway drug?
know. That's interesting. So my father was a sci-fi geek.
Ah,
And
ha-ha. Even though he may not prefer the term geek, we all know that it's okay.
Right.
And he used to always turn it on after we'd go to bed when I was a little girl. He'd turn on Star Trek. And I always knew that he'd be out there eating ice cream watching Star Trek. So I knew if I played it just right. So I'd kind of sneak up and be watching around the corner. And then after a while, it was like, oh, Tracy Lee comes sit down and I'd get my bowl of ice cream.
Ha,
right.
So this is like how it all started. And then other things started coming out, and I lived up the street from one of the producers of the original Star Trek, I mean Star Wars, and he was like, "Oh, you want to come watch a movie in my theater that my dad's finishing up on?" And I didn't know anything about Star Wars, you know, and we walk into the house and there's a theater in the house. I mean, there weren't theaters in houses, and there's all these life-size things, you know, all over the place. And that was my first experience with Star Wars.
That's wow. A nerd's dream.
Isn't it? Only I didn't even know that it was a dream come true until I got older. And yeah. Then I would say the film that really, and this is such a funny answer, but just kind of sunk it for me was Logan's Run. Just, I watched that thing over and over. I loved that film.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's one of our...
it's one that we go to, you know, we watch it at least... I think we watch it at least once a year.
Yeah.
We go back to it.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And I just, that thing really roped me in. And then I had Farrah Fawcett in it too. You know, of course, I always have my hair cut like Farrah Fawcett.
Of course.
But it was just so fun, you know. It's just and the storyline stuck with me throughout life. Like, well, what if we only got to live this long? You know, what have I done up to this point? You know, and it's like, because my imagination was always very vivid as a child. I used to like create all of these shows and remake all of these things on my front grass. And for some reason, the kids in the neighborhood played along. You know, but so I guess all of those films and then studying it and then being able to live it, it's like my child self would have been very proud.
So what wow. is it about science fiction that makes you drawn towards it? And is that the same thing that's make you want to do science fiction films?
Well, yeah, doing science fiction films is immersing yourself inside one of your favorite things. But I think I love science fiction, and we all have different reasons, but I love the fact that it's a combination between science and what could be and what has happened that they saw that could be back in the day where it was just a thought and a dream and some filmmaker's idea, mm-hmm. you know, and those are the things that actually come to be a lot of times. So it's the possibility and the probability of mankind and of everything that surrounds us.
So yeah. It's the speculative fiction that really just draws you in.
Yeah, it's very intelligent when you think about it. It's mm-hmm. very, it's way outside the box. It's like right. you get to play what if all the time, and you get to keep going with it. And even interacting with robots and things like that, in my mind, it's like people are like, oh my gosh, your connection with that robot, Hoagland, who actually sits in my office right here. They're like, how did you get that connection? I go, well, he was real to me. You know, he sat right. in my office for months beforehand, and I got upset if nobody acknowledged him or whatever because I had to make him real.
How big is Hoagland? Because I just see a voice credit.
The on the poster, he's the round floating robot that's over my shoulder.
As I go to.
He's amazing.
I'm looking at the movie poster that we got in the email. Can't quite. Well, it's a small attachment, so it's hard for me to see it. But
yeah. If you have an attachment thing on here, I would send it to you, but you don't.
Oh well.
Oh well.
But how big is Hoagland? He said he's a round thing.
Yeah, I'll show you.
So she's going over into her office.
Yes, because she's going to her office to get Hoagland, or a picture of Hoagland, I
and
guess.
We're on a Skype call, so she's going to show it to
actually
us.
Actually, getting him out of his box.
Oh, you're digging it. You actually have the prop?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Far out. Hold on. I got to see this better.
That's
totally cool.
That is incredible. That's.
He's in a display box in here.
Oh, cool. That is pretty cool.
Well, now we have to find a. I wonder if there's a publicity shot anywhere of Hoagland.
Yeah,
I'm sure there is.
If we find one, see, now we'll have to run that with the story,
yeah.
So that people know what we're talking about.
Exactly.
There's even a publicity shot out there. I can send it to you. There's a publicity shot out there of me kissing Hoagland. It was just like a. It wasn't while the cameras were rolling, but people love this picture.
Okay, please do. Send that. Yeah, we'll attach that with the story when we publish
yeah,
this.
And I'll give you my email address.
Yeah,
shortly.
Please do.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Great. That's really cool. So you have the prop then.
Well, I'm so attached to him after bringing him to life in my mind. It's like we were putting everything away after we finished filming, and it's like you can't put Hoagland in a box.
Oh, far out.
I want that. That's mine.
Well, how many other actors have done that? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Stephen Colbert. I mean, if he got, I think he got Sting. The sword, you know, after he appeared in The Hobbit. So, yeah, I suppose it's kind of a real thing for actors to want to have something, you know, a little keepsake from the work they've done.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, they count on you to bring them to life and to believe that they're real. And so the fact that connection still lasts afterwards is totally understandable.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's far out.
In my mind, I am that big kid, so...
So we've already covered some of the things that you're going to be doing, you know, coming down the road. You got a comedy. You said it was Jenna.
Who's Jenna?
And then you have another science fiction one coming up after that. So if people want to learn more about you, they want to follow you, they want to learn about the things that you're doing, is there any kind of social media presence that you may have, like an Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, any of that, so they can know more about Tracy Birdsall?
Absolutely. I'm kind of the portal of it all is tracybirdsall.com. On Twitter, it's at TracyBirdsall1. On Instagram, it's at TracyBirdsall1. And Facebook, it's TracyBirdsallOfficial.
Okay, so when you say the one, is that the number one or the word one?
It's the number one. There's some gal in the Midwest whose name is Tracy Birdsall.
You need to take it from her. You need to buy it from her.
Yeah. You know, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
You
know?
Well, you're the number one Tracy Birdsall. There you go.
There you go.
Well, thank you.
we'll go with that. How's that?
All right. Well, this has been really fun to learn who Tracy Birdsall is and learn about Rogue Warrior, Robot Fighter, and that has had a limited release in the theaters. It's currently at Walmart, as you said, and I believe I checked to see that it's a wider release on August the 15th. So at least it's on pre-order for Amazon August the 15th. So.
Yeah, it goes wide on the 15th. It'll be on streaming services and stuff at the same time.
Okay.
Excellent.
That's great. And well, thank you for being on the show this time.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, this is Pia Thrasher, filmmaker, actress, and artist, and you are listening to the Two Gay Geeks.
And here's a few selected birthdays for July 17th through July 23rd, 2017. And by the way, we're going to see Pia next week at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. Yeah. I really love that lady. She's fabulous.
She's great. On July 17th, J. Michael Straczynski, creator of Babylon 5 and also co-creator of
Sense8.
Happy birthday. Also July 17th, Phyllis Diller.
That was a terrible imitation.
And Art Linkletter.
Nobody sounded like Phyllis Diller.
No, not at all. July 18th, Paul Verhoeven, director.
Total Recall.
Yeah.
RoboCop.
Among other things.
I believe he did Starship Trooper.
Yeah. Lots of films.
If it's a bloody sci-fi film,
Paul Verhoeven
did
it. Yeah. Exactly. Also on July 18th, John Glenn and Vin Diesel. July 19th. I am Groot, yes. July 19th, Dr. Brian May.
I would love to just talk to him, but because he has a doctorate in astrophysics now. He finally got it a few years back. I would really like to talk to him about some of the things that he studied in astrophysics. You know, I just want to talk about music, but I'm fascinated with the science.
Exactly. Yeah, we just saw him here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, unfortunately, he was busy playing a guitar.
Yes. Also on July 19th, Benedict Cumberbatch, Jared Padalecki, and Pat Hingle. Pat Hingle was, oh my gosh,
Mr. Haney.
No,
well, actually,
Pat Hingle did, he was a staple on television and in movies. Most probably remember him as Commissioner Gordon in three of the Batman films. That was Pat Hingle.
No kidding. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That gentleman.
That Pat Hingle.
Yes, I do know who you're talking about now.
Also on July 19th, Lizzie Borden. Actor mother, what's her?
Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her father 40.
Mother 40 wax.
When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
There we go. Born in 1860. Now that she was never proven to be the axe murderer, but there's strong suspicions.
There's strong suspicions. Joan Crawford did a Lizzie Borden type film on her. There's an opera about it.
Well, I'm not going to talk about that. Also on July 19th, Edward Degas, born in 1834, painter, artist, impressionist, sculptor, jack of all trades. July 20th, Roy Skelton, voice actor.
Oh, voice of the Daleks.
Yes, voice of the Daleks. Also Diana Rigg, another Doctor Who alumni.
Well, she did appear in one episode of Doctor Who, but I think most people our age will remember her as Emma Peel from the TV series The Avengers, which has nothing to do with the Marvel comics.
Right. And the people today
will know her from Game of Thrones.
Yes. Also on July 20th, Verna Felton.
Any relation to Tom Felton?
No.
Oh, it was a try.
Yeah. Verna was the fairy godmother. She was also Flora, as well as Aunt.
So she provided voices for some classic Disney animated films.
Yeah, among other things. So, yes, Verna Felton was the fairy godmother. So the inspiration for our friend Teresa Corr, Fairy Godmother Travel. July 21st, Robin Williams, Don Knotts, and Ernest Hemingway. July 22nd, Bobby Sherman.
Oh, my.
The singer
way back in the day.
Lynn had a crush on him. My sister had a crush on him.
She a lot of people
painted him on
him.
A rock.
He was quite the little heartthrob. Him and
was.
David Cassidy were
exactly.
like the two big ones.
Right about exactly the same
time.
Yeah. Also on July 22nd, Don Henley, Danny Glover, Louise Fletcher.
Nurse Ratchet.
And Alan Menken.
Composer.
Yes. July 23rd, Daniel Radcliffe of Harry Potter fame,
yes.
In case you didn't know. Woody Harrelson, Arthur Treacher, born in 1894, and Vincent Sardi. And Vincent Sardi was born in 1894 as well. He was the founder of Sardi's Restaurant right across from the Schubert Theater.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. So in case anybody doesn't know, what's the big deal about Arthur Treacher?
Oh, Arthur Treacher was, well... Arthur Treacher's fish and chips.
Oh, I thought it was Treacher Features.
Treacher Features. Yeah, he did a lot of Treacher Features.
I'm sure he did.
But he was also in, what is it? Shirley Temple, several Shirley Temple movies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but he was a stage and screen actor and all kinds of other things. He lived to a ripe old age, too, so... But Arthur Treacher's fish and chips, that was his big thing that most people will remember him from. They won't remember his film career.
Right.
Because so, it was way
Treacher
back
Treacher fish
and
chips were pretty good. That was my first big experience with fish and chips.
Yeah. So, and that's it for the birthdays this time.
Hi, I'm Casual Shadow Jeremy, the man behind Casual Moan and also an undercover capricious changeling. I play games a lot, and I make my own stories with them, even if they already have stories. And I would love to share those stories with you over on Casual Mode, the gaming channel for geeks of all trades and masters of none. Each week, I post playthroughs of video games that strike my interest, and I put my own little spin on them. Tactical games like XCOM 2, RPGs like Chrono Trigger, even board games like Fortune Street. All with tons of ham and a healthy dose of C-grade voice acting. And occasionally, I do step away from games and talk about serious things. Or even not so serious things. So join me on twitch.tv/casualmodelive Sunday evenings, Monday afternoons, and Thursday late nights. Follow me on vidme at vid.me/casualmode and consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/casualmode. Thanks for your support, and as always, keep it casual, y'all.
Go give a listen to our friend Jeremy over at Casual Mode. And now it is time for
feedback.
Yeah, that thing that hangs around the horses. Feedback.
Okay. Sure. I got nothing. I got a little bit of feedback here, starting off from episode 125. And this is where we got to interview Zachary Wheeler, the author of Transient and Max in the Multiverse. And he simply writes, thanks, guys. It was an absolute pleasure chatting with you two. And another comment he said about how much fun he had. So, well, thank you, Zachary. It was a pleasure being able to chat with you. And then also in response to episode 125, at Nobi on Twitter. Now, he actually had left a comment on iTunes that we read in episode 125. Yeah, draw a map for you. So he responds back with, thanks for reading my review. And remember, we're not getting old. We're gaining geek experience or geek experience points.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting those experience points. What do we trade those in for, though? Got everything.
Yeah. And then we also did a story, again, we talked about the Sensate revival, and Kevin Falconberry.
My cousin's son, so second, third cousin, whatever.
Yeah. He wrote, season one was great, but I couldn't get into the Christmas special and obviously haven't started two. Is it worth it to stick with the show?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely yes. I'm surprised you couldn't get into the Christmas special. I thought it was beautiful, but holy moly, this second season?
Oh, yeah.
Intense. Really intense. So, yeah, I would definitely say pick it up. And then last week, we ran a little story about Captain America PSAs.
Yes.
Now, for those of you who don't know, there are three PSAs that appear in the new Spider-Man film. They're hilarious.
You have to see them.
You have to see them. The detention one is pretty funny.
Yeah.
There's something that's just a little preachy about it. That's hilarious. But you have to see these. These things are an absolute blast. And it's why we say you have to watch all the way to the end of the film when the credits are fully done and the house lights are up and management is trying to drag you out of your seat.
Yep.
Then you leave the theater. But
there's more coming.
There are more coming. Apparently they filmed quite a few and they're all going to be appearing on the home video release. And they're already talking about the home video release of Spider-Man. I mean, the movie's only been out just 2 weeks. And they're already discussing what they're going to be putting in for the DVD, Blu-ray, digital download form for Spider-Man. So, the extra PSAs are going to be there. I can't wait to see them. You know, what I think Marvel should do, they should take a lesson from Pixar, what Pixar used to do years ago with the mock blooper reels.
Oh yeah.
Switch them out. Add a new one every so many weeks. Change out, you know, that way you get people coming back to the theater. It's a great marketing gimmick. Anyway, Gary Lindros, friend of the show, simply wrote, loved them. Well, if you watch them, you have to love them. They're absolutely fantastic. And then we also, some time ago, we ran a story about the Forever War movie updates from John Spates. And somebody from the Ninu Kori movie collections simply writes, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for acknowledging. We greatly appreciate it. And that is our feedback for the week.
That's the feedback. If you have a comment or you want to tell us something that you like or dislike, or you want to comment on our episodes, on our articles that we run, whatever it is, you can do that. We provide a space for you at the end of every article, including the articles on the show, to leave comments. And please play nice when you leave comments. That's always a good thing. You can look us up on our Facebook page, TG Squared Studios, and you can comment on our Facebook page. You can comment on Twitter. You can comment on our articles at tggeeks.com, on our YouTube episodes, or you can even leave us a voicemail through Facebook, or you can call our listener feedback line. Now, it's a Skype line, and they don't allow you to do a personal greeting anymore.
We can't do a personal greeting.
Don't be alarmed if you get some recorded voice that's
a robot.
A robot. And if you leave us a comment on our Skype feedback line, you can get played on air. And that number is 469-TG-Geeks. That's 469-844-3357.
You don't need to hear their identification. They're the two gay geeks. They can go about their business. Move along.
And so that was our good friend Mark Biaggi that was doing the voice of Obi-Wan, and hopefully we'll get to see him next week.
It'd be nice.
Yeah.
He works for Comic-Con, so I don't doubt that he will be insanely busy.
Yeah, but we might be able to wave at him. You never know.
Off in the distance, yes. Yeah. I think he likes to do some cosplay when he's down there. But yeah, he's going to be just crazy busy. So, yep. I mean, if we get to see him, great. If we don't, you know, we understand. Anyway, this story really is kind of near and dear to our hearts.
Yeah.
Apparently, Warner Brothers Animation is going to be, they're looking at what possible Batman stories they could do for their next feature-length home distribution or home video release. And instead, they decided to go in a completely different direction and go towards what was known as the Elseworlds stories, alternate histories and things like that. And they're going to be converting Gotham by Gaslight into a feature film.
Yeah.
Into an animated feature film for home release.
Yeah.
And the reason we have a personal excitement about it is because Gotham by Gaslight was actually written by a friend of ours, Brian Augustin.
Yeah, and we're hopefully have an interview with him soon. He was we were going to have that for today, but he's not feeling well.
Well,
Brian.
Yes, please get well soon.
Yeah.
But in any case, Gotham by Gaslight, this is an interesting story in that it's set in the Victorian era. You know, here's a brief synopsis.
That was a bad out of time reference.
I don't get it. Anyway, here's an official synopsis of the comic book's story. In an age of mystery and superstition, how would the people of Gotham react to a weird creature of the night? A bat-garbed vigilante feared by the guilty and the innocent alike. The very first Elseworlds tale reimagines the Dark Knight detective in Victorian times and pits him against the infamous murderer Jack the Ripper, among other people, because there's actually a second story that was written by someone else. It's fascinating. Yeah. I rather liked it a great deal. And what I do also like about it is, you've got two iconic figures, one, you know, one fictional and one very historic.
Right.
To put them in the same universe at the same time is a really interesting idea. Jack the Ripper, who terrorized people, Batman, who terrorizes people. To put them in the same time, the Victorian era, where superstition really just ran rampant.
Yeah.
It is a fascinating idea, and I look forward to being able to talk to Brian to kind of pick his brain and understand why did he want to set Batman in this era, because I'm sure there's a really good story behind that.
Yeah. It was interesting also that Jack the Ripper switched continents, too.
So. Yes. Well, Well, no, we don't want to get into any kind of spoilers. We recommend getting it. It is available for Kindle.
Yes.
If you want to get it there, that's how we have an autographed hard copy, but we got it on Kindle because we didn't want to damage it. But it's a fascinating, fascinating story. I am very intrigued to see what they can do with this. It got a lot of excitement when the news item came out.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping
a lot of people are excited about it.
A lot of people are excited
popular,
about it.
Very popular.
It is terribly popular. For a sneak peek at the Batman Gotham by Gaslight animated movie, all you can do is check out the home media release of Batman and Harley Quinn, which will be released on August 29th, 2017. And I would say that this is not the first time someone has attempted it. Someone who ran a live independent video series called Ripper took a little stab at doing Gotham by Gaslight and was quite interesting. But yeah, we'll have the link for this in the show notes for this episode, and you can also see it at tggeeks.com. So I would recommend checking that out.
Yeah.
Now, going on this past weekend, if it isn't San Diego Comic-Con, the other big thing, D23.
Yep.
Which hits Anaheim every other year, and this one, I think, D23s are mad.
They're just massive.
They are massive.
They take over the entire Anaheim Convention Center.
They really do. In fact, I think it's arguable as to which one actually has a bigger mass appeal. Because I've seen photos of the people that attended this thing. It was huge.
Yep.
I mean, I'm talking huge. I mean, there are people that were lined up in the parking lot.
Yep.
Just to get
camped
in. I mean,
overnight.
Camping overnight for, you know, a show that, I mean, people are in line one day. And there's another line for people who are camping out to get in for the next day. I mean, that's nuts.
That's crazy.
I mean, really, that's insanity. Nonetheless, a lot of stuff came out at D23. We're going to be running some more stories in the next couple of days before we hit down to Comic-Con. So keep your eyes open for that. But one thing that came out was the official U.S. teaser trailer for A Wrinkle in Time. That was released over the weekend, and we got our hands on it, and it's on our website. Again, we'll have the link for this in the show notes. Now, so you can see the trailer there, the little teaser trailer there. It is real. What did you think?
Oh, wow. It looked incredible. I'm excited to see it.
What were some of the things that really leapt out at you for it?
The alternate universe, just the creepiness of it.
It does come off a little creepy,
yeah,
doesn't
just,
it?
Just a little creepy.
I hope it stays that way.
Yeah, it was also fascinating to see Oprah Winfrey in that, and you know, just it was a nice trailer. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued. I'm kind of excited with some of the things that we saw there. There's one scene that has this kind of rather robotic Stepford-like community that was darn right creepy. Yeah. And I hope they do keep the creepy element, because even though this is a Disney film and it's being released in the theater and it's technically a family movie, I would like for it to still have that creep factor, because this is not the first time Disney has done A Wrinkle in Time. They took a stab at it years ago, back in 2004. And they did it for ABC, you know, for the Disney show, the Disney, you know, whatever Disney show they had on ABC at the time. And it was a bit of a whimper. Nobody liked it. The director for this upcoming movie, she didn't like it. That'll be Ava DuVernay. She didn't care for the adaptation. It's like a lot of people didn't like it. It was just not a good movie.
Yeah, and interesting thing about this film is it's written and directed and stars
women. This is very female empowering.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, the screenplay is a woman, director is a woman, producer is a woman. The book was written by a woman. I mean, this is women power, but not to the point where it becomes preachy.
No. It's exciting.
And again, and it's got a really good cast. I mean, you already pointed out Oprah Winfrey. It has Reese Witherspoon. It has Chris Pine.
Yeah.
The cast is monumental. Michael Pena from Ant-Man, he's in this. He's a hoot. Andre Holland who was in Selma, she's in it. Zach Galifianakis from The Hangover, he's in it. I mean, good grief. The list is just huge. It's one hell of a cast. And the synopsis simply goes down. This is it. It was a dark and stormy night. Meg Murray, her small brother Charles Wallace, and her mother had come down to the kitchen for a midnight snack when they were upset by the arrival of a most disturbing stranger. "Wild nights are my glory," the unearthly stranger told them. "I just caught in a downdraft and blown off course. Let me sit down for a moment and then I'll be on my way. Speaking of ways, by the way, there is such a thing as a tesseract." There's your spoiler. There's your little teaser right there.
Yeah.
So and again, you're right. There's a creep factor in this trailer. I hope they keep it. I'd really like for that to stay, because I think that could just really make this a great film.
I do too.
Now.
And
speaking of a very strong woman, yes, as of when we are recording this episode, just a few hours ago, after the men's finals at Wimbledon on BBC One, they made the announcement there is a new actor playing the Doctor, and her name, Jodie Whittaker.
Yay!
And she's already got a slight, a 6 degrees kind of connection to Doctor Who. She starred or co-starred in the TV series
Broadchurch.
Broadchurch with David Tennant.
Yeah.
So
she's tangentially associated with Doctor Who.
How long were you working on that pun?
About 30 seconds.
Okay. Yeah. I thought as much. This will be interesting to say the least.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see the Doctor played by a woman.
The trailer, I mean, it's the way they presented it, there's nothing really significant about it. We didn't have the video, but you can find it anywhere. Just do a Google search, but we do have a description of it. It's just this person wearing a coat and with a hood, walking through this wooded area, slowly stops and reveals a TARDIS key in her hand. And yes, we see that it's a woman taking over the part. And that's it. And we understand that it's Jodie Whittaker. Now, what's fascinating is this broke the internet.
Yeah.
It seriously,
literally,
it seriously broke the internet. But luckily, most of the comments that we've been seeing so far have been very positive.
Yeah,
you know, like I'm not crying because Doctor Who is a woman. You're crying because Doctor Who is a woman. Get out of my face. Okay.
Interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see how Sexy reacts.
That will be fascinating. How will Sexy? Yeah, because Sexy has always had. Well, I would imagine Sexy is non-gendered.
Well, we're referring to the Doctor's wife.
Yeah, obviously referring to the Doctor's wife.
Where, you know, called her Sexy.
Yeah, he calls her Sexy. I think, you know, they're, you know, and it kind of makes sense if Time Lords are actually sort of past the whole gender thing, you know, minus the whatever body they get, you know, then maybe it makes sense that the soul of the TARDIS is genderless as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's some other things here, like I'm in tears because imagine all the little girls wanting to be actors and now knowing that one day they could be the Doctor.
Exactly.
Another person
says, very empowering.
It is. Another person says, I can't believe I'm alive at the same time as the announcement of the first female Doctor. And this announcement is my favorite. Please, please, please let her companion be a hot young man who wears skimpy clothes for no reason.
Yeah. Nardal.
No. No. No, I would like it to be somebody like, you know, Colton Haynes.
Well, there you go.
I mean, that would be nice. So the majority of the internet response has been very popular. I do know one or two people personally that I'm kind of curious to get what their takes are going to be.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear.
Yeah, I'll be fascinated to know, Eugene, what you think about the new female Doctor.
Yeah.
But if anybody has an opinion on this, I really would like to know, what are your thoughts about a new Doctor Who? This woman playing the part.
Exactly.
I'd like to know what people think. You know, please give us some kind of feedback. I'm really curious as to what your opinions are. Do you think this is a good idea? Do you think this is a bad idea? Are they pandering because of demand for a female Doctor? I mean, I'd really like to know some of your thoughts. I think it's at the very least is an excellent discussion point.
Absolutely. And as always, we have follow-up items. Thank you to whoever nominated us for a Parsec Award. They're in the judging process right now, so hopefully we'll have some news soon. And we want you to check out our calendar on the website if you have a birthday or a fan fest or a film festival or a con or whatever it is. Send us a note. We'll put it on the calendar for you. Come see us and say hi. We're going to be at the following events, Comic-Con in San Diego for the con, and we have a panel on Thursday the 20th at 1 p.m. at the library, so come say hi. We will be at Horrible Imaginings Film Festival in San Diego on Saturday, September 9th, and then OperaCon by Arizona Opera on October 21st, and then we're going to be at Phoenix Comic-Con Fan Fest, November 11th and 12th. So we'll be there for the entire time, covering the show, doing our thing that we do so well.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows that we're huge supporters of independent creators, and not just filmmakers, but comic book artists, writers, etc. And especially independent filmmakers, as we talked to Tracy Birdsall. She was a producer on the film of Rogue Warrior, Robot Fighter.
Yeah, as we discussed, she's a bit of a champion of independent filmmakers.
Exactly. And we found that there's a tremendous amount of talent out there that doesn't get the big money or fame. So if you see or hear about a crowdfunding campaign that somebody's doing for whatever it is, if it's a film or a comic book or whatever, please consider supporting it. You can usually get involved for as little as a dollar. And you never know, you might be part of something big.
Mm-hmm.
Support independent creators. Phoenix Comic-Con Fan Fest, November 11th and 12th, as I said. More info to come on that. They haven't released anything yet on that. And Phoenix Comic-Con next year is May 24th through the 27th. Once again, it's on Memorial Day weekend.
Yay! Less PTO.
Yeah. OperaCon by Arizona Opera coming October 21st. There's going to be several events planned prior to the performance of Hercules versus the Vampires on that evening. So stay tuned for more, and you can check out Arizona Opera at azopera.org.
Special shout out to Doctor Who Talking Who on Twitter. They publish the Doctor Who Fancast Guide that frequently republishes stories that we've run. You can find the Fancast Guide by looking up Doctor Who Talking Who on Twitter. Their handle is at Talking Who. And in the same vein, there is the Nazi Punching Skald on Twitter. Then. He is our good friend Brian Weber. And he posts the Arkle Times Post-Dispatch news that frequently runs our stories. You can find that by going to Twitter and looking for at Arkle. That is at A-R-K-L-E. He also publishes on Tumblr the incorrect Star Trek Voyager quotes. Check those out. We've read some of those in the past. They are a hoot. Just don't let your boss see you doing it while you're at work.
Yeah.
And then there's also Sci-Fi Obsession. We thank them for republishing our stories from time to time. They can be found at facebook.com/sci-fi-ob. That is S-C-I-F-I-O-B.
And we want to give a shout out to The Lookie Show on Twitter and The Lookie Show on YouTube. They have a great YouTube episodes of reviews of films in a very unique manner. So check them out, Lookie Show on YouTube.
Special shout out to the Facebook group, The Gay Geek, for allowing us to post our episodes on their page. Their URL is facebook.com/group/thegaygeek. We love them because they have phenomenal content, very, very creative content. And they have an amazing moderator. His name is Jeremiah Reeves. Thank you, Jeremiah, for giving us permission to share our stories and episodes there.
Yeah. And we want to remind you to click on our Amazon ads. We feature a number of Amazon ads for various items, as well as a search ad at the end of each article. It doesn't cost anything. You can, and you don't have to buy anything. But if you do choose to buy something, use one of our search ads. It gets us a little kickback. So check out the Amazon ads. And lastly, please rate us and review us on iTunes.
We love it.
We love it. As well as subscribe to our YouTube channel. We really appreciate it. Up next time, we're going to have an interview with a local Phoenix author, Ms. Beth Cato. She has a book coming out soon. So stay tuned for that. Okay, that should do it for this episode of TG Geeks Webcast. Be sure to check out the article for this webcast episode. We have several links on the page. And remember, you can comment on our Facebook page or at the website, tggeeks.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 469-TGGEEKS. That is 469-844-3357 from TG Squared Studios. I am Keith Lane. Thanks for listening. I bid you peace.
Cheers.